innovation often lies in opportunity, and sometimes there's a void. And then there's serendipity, the chance of landing on an idea or an invention because you just ran into something unexpectedly. Inventing new music styles can also be a process of morphing or shape-shifting. Welcome back to Accelerando. My name is Paula Tuttle, and today we're exploring the creation of some unexpected musical forms. Serendipity, the term was coined from an old Persian name for Sri Lanka. It was called Serendip before it was Sri Lanka. And there's a Persian fairy tale called The Three Princes of Serendip, and it's about three princes who kept making discoveries by accident or by chance. So Sri Lanka, or Serendip, is an island country in the Indian Ocean, and the term serendipity was probably first used by one writer writing to another. He was saying that he had unexpectedly discovered a painting that he thought was lost. He said it was serendipitous. So Stephen Johnson, in his book, Where Good Ideas Come From, he says, serendipity plays well in open platforms. So open platforms are places where serendipity plays well. In modern times, open platforms could be YouTube and Twitter, and anything where a computer network is allowed to have the users recreate and redefine the system. But another open platform could be a coffee house. And he loves to talk about the coffee house environment, where people get together and they share ideas, and then the ideas change. They change shape. The common use of the term shapeshifter has a fairy tale quality too. And we usually think of characters like the Hulk, or Dr. Jekyll turning into Mr. Hyde. And if you look in Wikipedia, Johnson's use of the term shapeshifter isn't there, but it's a good use of the term. In his book, Johnson examines environments where ideas grow, and he has four quadrants in his essay. And the fourth quadrant is the one that has the best track record for creating new ideas. Open sources, like academic environments, where ideas can be borrowed, developed in collaboration because there's no impediments like patents and copyrights. There aren't walls between the creators. James Petrilli is a name that musicians' union members know. He was the AFM president from 1940 to 1958, and he did some historic things, and he was also on the wrong side of a few things. As for the wrong side, he wouldn't let the black musicians' unions join the white musicians' unions. He was pro-segregation. Here in Pittsburgh, our local is number 60-471, because 471 was the black musicians' local, and the two were finally joined in about 1961. The main thing Petrilli is remembered for in his career as the national president was in 1942, there was a ban on commercial recording. On August 1st, 1942, all musicians agreed and banned commercial recording because the handwriting was on the wall and it said that these recordings were putting us out of work. The realization that clubs, restaurants, and outdoor activities could use a stack of records to replace live musicians was becoming apparent to everybody. So up until July 31st, 1942, the record studios were bustling. And suddenly, there was a drought in the lives of the American people who were just getting used to buying records of their favorite performers. And it was a real problem. So getting around this situation, some new things emerged. The union didn't include vocalists, so a cappella groups were created. And there were a few instruments that weren't considered union-worthy, like harmonicas. So some recordings were made with harmonicas. The ban went on for months before Petrilli agreed to movies being allowed to record, and Casablanca was one of those movies, and As Time Goes By was forbidden to be released as a song commercially outside of the movie because the piano was a union musician.
A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh.
But the recording studios just dug up some old recording of As Time Goes By, and of course it sold a lot of copies. And there was also a war going on, so Petrilli decided that they could make records for the armed forces. So there were these records that were made and given to the soldiers, and they were supposed to destroy them before they returned home. But in all other cases, the recording studios were empty. And I think we all can relate to this kind of hiatus or sudden disruption. So after 6 months of this drought, Petrilli offered a deal. If the record companies would pay royalties to a fund that would support live music, Petrilli would lift the ban. Well, the three biggest recording companies said no. Sony, Capitol, and Columbia thought Congress would force the union president to lift the ban. Well, that didn't happen. Congress did not make Petrilli lift the recording ban. So a lot of small recording studios signed on to the agreement to pay royalties to the union. And this was the creation of the Music Performance Trust Fund. And a lot of small studios got back into work while the three big studios held out. So it was serendipitous for the new entrepreneurs and the smaller studios. One of the most popular styles in the early 40s was swing. That was big bands. Think Glenn Miller. And there were lots of records recorded commercially, and the ban left a real void. During these years, the bebop style grew in the empty slot that the recording ban had created. So bebop is fast-tempoed and has unusually complex chord progressions, and it grew out of swing. But bebop wasn't really dance music, and swing music was. Bebop was created in the late 20s and 30s, and some of the most famous players are Miles Davis, Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, Thelonious Monk, and Art Blakey. And it became a refuge for the listening crowd. It also belonged to the black musicians community. So the irony of these musicians being segregated or not allowed to join the white locals cannot be overlooked. The recording ban created an opportunity for bebop to grow and thrive. The musicians that played this kind of music would come into the after-hours clubs in New York. Minton's Playhouse and Monroe's Uptown House were two of those clubs. And there was a sense of camaraderie and competition. Could they play back each other's extended improvisations? Could they take them even further? Could they get inside the harmonies and then take them outside? These sessions were like the creation of the universe, atoms colliding and forming new elements and ideas. This open platform was a place where musicians came to grow, create, and synergize with each other. And the harmonies and the rhythms became more and more complex. And the musicians didn't call it bebop. They called it modern music. Someone in the media dubbed it bebop, and eventually it caught on. But modern music is really a great way to define it, because it kept changing, and so it was always new, newer than yesterday's new. In 1944, the three big studios finally signed the royalty agreement with the union, and the fund was never going to replace all the live performing, all the money that musicians made, that the recording era would take away. It never could. It used to be that the theaters and hotels and churches and restaurants, they all had live music. They all had a live band. And the invention of recorded sound eventually diminished all those opportunities. The wonderful thing about the development of bebop, even though it can be recorded, the live improvisation can only really be appreciated when the listener is in the room, watching the creative process. So the very first bebop recording was after the ban was lifted in 1944. But it's really just a moment in time. You just wait another week, and things have gotten more complex. A week goes by, somebody invents a new riff, somebody invents a new chord change. Things are always changing. There are still jazz clubs in Pittsburgh. Tenor sax player Eric DeFade plays at Chopino's at least once a month. And others like Lily Abreu, she sings at Con Alma quite frequently. If you're in New York, you can visit Maureen's Jazz Cellar in Nyack, where Pittsburgh-born Dave Budway plays keys, and he runs the club named after his sister. Our musician's local has adopted a few slogans. It ain't got that swing if it's played by a thing. And live music is best. And demand live music. Our membership includes the last vestiges of members that remember the days of Petrilli and thriving music in Pittsburgh hotels and restaurants. My high school orchestra teacher was one of those musicians. He played violin in the Pittsburgh Symphony, but he was also a trombonist at the clubs. And he said there was lots of music in those days. And I felt lucky just knowing someone who lived during that period. It's hard to name another business that replaced live workers earlier than the music business. But it's coming for all of us. In the case of musicians, the recording industry really couldn't replace the bebop musicians. The more generic the music, the easier it is to sell it to the public canned. If you want to stay out of the realm of what the computers can imitate, you have to stay creative. It's the only place you're safe. Have a great week, and of course, keep supporting live music. I'll see you next time.